Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast, is brought to you today in part by Audible, offering anytime, anywhere listening of your favorite audiobooks with the biggest selection ever, and it's all backed by Amazon. I'm currently listening to Children of Exile by Margaret Peterson Haddix, and nearly every minute that I can. The story of Rosie and Bobo leaving the seemingly utopian Fred Town in order to live with parents they've never met in home has the tension I always look forward to from a Haddix novel. Only this time, I have so many questions, and I feel like I'm back in fifth grade reading The Giver for the first time. The sequel, Children of Refuge, recently released and is also available in audiobook format. I plan on not wasting a moment starting into it as soon as I finish Exile. Visit the show notes for this episode at allthewonders.com to start your free trial with Audible and support this podcast with the same click of a mouse or tap of a screen. I hope you'll go try it out and see for yourself. Happy listening. Meet Vashti Harrison, finding truth in the stories of the women who came before her. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 409 of the podcast with Vashti Harrison. Vashti's debut is called Little Leaders, Bold Women in Black History, and it is a powerhouse of a book. Seldom do I share a book with my students that elicits the interest and excitement that I experienced last week when I shared Little Leaders with them for the first time. In that beautiful way, it gave me yet another thing to love about the book. Vashti's got an amazing story leading into publication, and I even got to nerd out with her about design. So rad. So rad. Her book is just, you're going to love the design of this book. You're going to love everything about this book. I love everything about this book. I hope you enjoy this one a whole lot. Here's episode number 409 of the podcast with Vashti Harrison. Welcome to the podcast, Vashti Harrison. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Matthew Winner, I'm so excited.
Oh, I get my name sung. Oh, my word.
Yes. You know, I've been singing the All the Wonders theme song all day long.
Stop it. Oh, Emily Arrow would love that you sing that.
I have to mix it up. I've got the remix version. I will not sing it for you right now, but you've got to know that we are rocking out to it.
Hey, I've hit 400 episodes. I should be calling out for people to send me remix versions. That's amazing.
Exactly.
All right, Vashti, you have set this on our maiden voyage into remix territory. I'll be excited to see what people send out. We'll see. Well, anyway, I digress because we are here to celebrate you, my friend. You who are debuting this gorgeous, gorgeous book birthed from the internet and now imprinted in our hands. Congratulations, Little Leaders is, at the time of this coming out, it's out in the world. Yay.
Yeah. Okay, here we are in the future, and the book has released. I don't know how to respond just yet, but I'm so excited. It's been like, it feels like a long time, but it's actually been such a short amount of time that I can't even process how exciting it is to turn something that was entirely digital into a physical object that like children are holding and reading and experiencing. It's so wild and exciting.
It is, it's wild. Oh, wait, so I know, I should back up. Let me have you introduce this book. Share with people your pitch. Have you worked on your pitch for this book?
I have not whatsoever. So
then this will be extra amazing. All right. Pitch us, Little Leaders, Bold Women in Black History. Go.
Hello, my name is Vashti Harrison. I'm an author and illustrator. I've created a book called Little Leaders, Bold Women in Black History, which is a collection of 40 biographies of women, of African American women through history. It covers scientists and athletes and artists, and really focuses in on the famous and not so famous women through American history. And while you read it, hopefully you can paint a beautiful picture of incredible women from America.
Wow. I love it. Nailed it. 10 points for the landing. That was good. This project was birthed on the internet, you told me. I hesitate to ask because you're going to, I think, in a way, blow my mind about how fast this happened. But when did you start this?
I think I had the idea on January 31st, 2016.
No, it was 2016. I knew it. Oh my gosh. Things don't happen this fast in publishing. You have lightning in a bottle. Oh my word.
So I had created these little characters that I called the Little Ladies. I just wanted to create this kind of every girl model for a long time. I had been doing these kind of like fashion illustrations, and I wanted to bring together my love for kid lit style illustration and my love for fashion illustration. So I had these characters that I had done a couple of things with maybe around like October 2015. And they were just, sitting around in my vault, my mental vault. And I was really thinking about these social media projects that people do, like Inktober and Mermaid, where you draw a mermaid for every day of the month of May, or in Inktober you will paint and or illustrate in ink for the month of October. And so I really wanted to create this kind of challenge for myself to do something every day for the month of February. And I had these characters, and I thought, you know, it would be great is if I just choose specifically women. I was really excited about or just interested in telling some of the stories that you don't often hear. I felt like since I was a kid, I felt like I was hearing a lot of the same stories over and over again during Black History Month. And so I thought it was a great opportunity for me to do research and to just learn about, you know, famous women through American history. So it was late January 31st that I thought, okay, I already have these figures, these characters. Let's take a trip through American history. And so I think it was like, I think I posted the first one really early in the morning, like 4 o'clock in the morning on February 1st. And it was Sojourner Truth. And I had an idea of what this project could or should be. I thought it was going to be just a drawing challenge for myself to just do something consistently every day for the month of February, not a very long month, you know? But it was at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was reading Sojourner Truth's biography, and I was just weeping with, I was just so full of emotion because I was just struck by her story. I mean, I feel like I'd been familiar with kind of the hallmarks of her story, her role as an activist, an abolitionist, and a women's rights activist. But there's a part of her story where she is just fighting to keep her family together. And it's so beautiful and so powerful that I was just like, holy cow, this is going to be a really incredible project. for me, you know, emotionally, to just connect with these stories and these women. And after I posted that first one and saw the response of people on Instagram, I was like, oh, people like this. So it really just kind of snowballed from there. It was only a couple of days in, I wrote to my agent and I asked her if she thought that there was a potential here for a book, and she was already about to ask me the same thing.
Just a couple days in. Wow.
Yeah.
Vashti, did you, I know from having friends, illustrator friends, that sometimes moving into Inktober, people start with a plan, with a focus. How far ahead, if you were planning at all, how far ahead did you plan out these little ladies before starting into February?
I didn't plan at all.
No.
No,
you had like some names floating in your head and that's it. You
didn't exactly.
Oh my word. How adventurous, how exciting, how exhilarating, right?
Yeah, it was a real journey. All I did was just like, I think I hit a couple of websites like biography.com, Encyclopedia Britannica. I mean, I have a couple of books here. Like there's a book on my bedside table right now called Harlem Speaks about artists, or you know, performers and artists from the Harlem Renaissance. And so there was just I had a couple of names of people that I was really interested in writing and reading more about, but you know, some of it was just about exploring and finding new names. You know, there were a lot of people I hadn't heard of. Alice Ball was someone that I posted.
Right.
Mary Bowser. Yeah. I mean, even like, for example, Mahalia Jackson. I'd known her name and I was a little bit familiar with her story. But, you know, it was a really great opportunity for me to just like really dive deep into you know, American history. And it was just so beautiful and exciting. And I would be up really late working on these things and just like crying my eyes out because I was just like really overwhelmed with how, you know, incredibly important these women were.
And you're sharing too, I like the way you're saying that, like there were some of these names that you were familiar with, but to find out the full breadth of what their life lived meant, not only to them, but to the people around them, and then to history. In some ways, what do you say in your introduction? There's a great line, a lot of great lines, but you said, some of them were reluctant leaders, while others were not even conscious of their bravery, but their legacies live on to pave the way for more of us to follow. I like that idea that we lead, the individuals can lead and not even be conscious of what they're doing, but they're leading by example. The life that they're living, people will look back and find inspiration, or the people in their lives are seeing this inspiration. To me, the way that read, and the way that these names and their stories read in your book, spoke so much to me about the children that I work with, because you include some very young people in your book. And to know that some of these children, like you just don't know, that you can be here standing on the edge of your future, and there's people around you that see greatness in you, mm-hmm. and are watching those steps that you will take, knowing in confidence it's going to be an amazing life that we will look to.
Yeah, it's really incredible. It's like, it's making me tear up right now just thinking, like, for example, about Ruby Bridges. And she was so little. She had no idea what, you know, what her story would mean to the world. But, you know, it's just really, for me, it's just important to know that for her family, getting an education was the most important thing. And living her life as a child and just being true to being a little kid and going to school, that means something. And it just, it's just really important, in American history, that to be able to go back to that and realize that she was just an innocent child at the time. You know, I could compare her story to someone who, you know, was a fierce activist and, you know, stood up in the face of great power, and, you know, find value in both of the stories. It's just really incredible.
Yeah. For me, the first name that struck me too of just, I did not know this name, but it, because of how you introduced her, I just won't forget her, was Alice Ball.
Mm-hmm.
Alice Ball, this chemist who, first African-American to graduate with a master's degree from Hawaii, from University of Hawaii, and had found what ended up being the leading cure for leprosy. I was like, oh my word, to find these discoveries, to trace back these stories, to know these names. I feel like there's so many names in this book that, I mean, I even take Oprah Winfrey, and I told you I brought this book into my students, and to see the way that they're looking at these names, and to know that there's names in here that I take for granted that I know well, but I don't know that they know well, or that they know the name. I feel like Oprah's name is ubiquitous, but do we know, other than this great platform that she has, do we know what else makes her great? And to have you articulate it the way you did, it's just a wonderful thing. I can't stop saying what a gift it is that you've given us in this book.
Thank you so much. I feel like when I went into making this a book, I was really just trying to tap into that moment of when I would be up at 4 o'clock in the morning reading these stories and crying. Like, it was, you know, I can't fit an entire woman's story in life's, you know, an incredibly important, powerful figure in American history. I can't fit their entire biography into this, you know, 300 page bio on a, you know, half of a spread, but sorry, my microphone fell out of my ear. But so I was really just interested in tapping into this really sweet, beautiful, powerful, emotional moment. And for me, that's what makes a little leader. There were some really important people I could have added to the book, but I just didn't find this part of their story that really I could tap into. And in the case of some of the bigger names, I was worried that, I didn't want to add such ubiquitous names because, you know, their stories are part of the mainstream. But in the case of Oprah, I decided to add her to the book because I found it so important that her empathy is what moved her career, moved her from being a local news anchor to being, you know, a household name. And she had lost her job when she was just a young woman. But it was her ability to connect with people that really made her, like, that created the Oprah brand. And I thought that that's just so powerful. It's like, it doesn't have to deal with, success doesn't have to be about talent, doesn't have to be, you know, about how good your grades were. It's about finding the thing that you like and you're really good at. And for Oprah, it was connecting with people. And I think that that's really powerful.
I think that there are these qualities that you're saying now that I see in you that I really love and admire. So I want to just call that out as well. That one of the things for those that don't follow you on Twitter or on Instagram or where people find you, I like finding you on Twitter because that's where I live. What I like about you on Twitter is that you're a person that engages others. I feel like we can all be strangers on this great social media platform, and yet here you come along and you share a picture with us. And so many times recently I've seen you share these pictures and say, tell me the story of what this picture is, of this character in this image that you've painted. What's going on with her? What's her story? And I love that you're inviting us into that storytelling world, or to hear what other people are seeing in what you're creating. And maybe you step back then and see how it compares to what you were thinking when you were creating the art. I love, though, that you are a presence online that invites others in.
Yeah, I hadn't really considered it like that. I appreciate you saying that. I that reminds me of before I started illustrating, before I dived into the world of Kid Lit, I was, I still am, a filmmaker, and I was making these experimental films and documentaries about my family and folklore in Trinidad and Tobago. And one of the most exciting things when I was working on this one documentary was asking people about folklore and its role in society in Trinidad and Tobago, where my mom is from. And the first time you would talk to people, they wouldn't really have an answer like, oh, you know, you have to talk to an old person. They know all the ghost stories, or I don't have any stories like that. But the longer you sit with people, the more they think about it, the more they realize they have these stories to tell. And so I am a firm believer that everybody has this bit of creativity in them. And so it's like really exciting when people who don't consider themselves writers or don't consider themselves creative, and you ask them to just tell them the story of this picture, they've got something really beautiful hidden inside. So sometimes when I draw, I get like way too wrapped up in the technical flaws. And so it's really great to bring those two things together, to ask them to see something in something that I've created, and two, to have them, you know, look at this thing as just a beautiful art piece instead of, you know, seeing all the flaws that I can notice and pick out, you know?
Tell me what you like about this, because all I'm seeing is flaws right now.
Well, remind me how to be happy with something.
That's remind a really good point. Yeah. Remind me to see the beauty in this. Yeah. When you, I should ask in particular for little leaders, what tools did you use to make the art in this? Are you working primarily digitally, or are you working traditionally?
Primarily digitally.
That's what I assumed,
In Photoshop. I like to use the Kyle T. Webster's brushes to replicate this kind of hand-drawn look on some of the things. So it's a mixture of like gouache and pencil brushes and watercolor brushes.
I like, as a non-artist, why do I have to keep like outing myself that way? I don't know why I always do that. But again, working with children, I love that there are tools, digital tools, that simulate real materials. I like that. I like when we study your art and it looks like, no, I can see the texture in the watercolor. That's a thing. But it's digital. That's an effect. That's an intention that Vashti's doing to make it look this way. I like that. Especially, as I was saying, we're doing this, we're doing an award with our school where we're reading all these different books. We're studying the illustration. We are trying to decide what we think are the best illustrations in these books. And we get to look in that SIP information that the Library of Congress provides and read, oh, this was made with watercolor and ink and with digital touch-up or rendering or all of these words that are becoming now part of our vernacular that I didn't know before. It's just a neat thing to be a child or a childlike adult and just go, oh my word, how are they making these things?
So. Yeah, it's all really exciting. I mean, I'm a firm believer that, that not every story has to be told in a single medium, but also try out other media and see if that's the tool that works for you. For me, I found that I can work really quickly and let the ideas come out and flow while I'm working digitally. And so that can end up being really useful to my creative process. And other times that's not useful to my creative process. So for little leaders, I was happy. I found this happy place or happy medium in the media that I was using. So I think that there are so many opportunities and so many ways to tell a story. It's about what works for you and what works for the story and finding that marriage, or, you know, creating a firm marriage between the two.
Okay, so I need to nerd out hard over your art, over your design. I want to get there. I've been like chomping to get there because, like, okay, you know how to design a book. Let me just say that. It is nice. I like your work. It is awesome. Let me back up, though, and just ask you, where did you come in with art? Where was art in your childhood? Or what called you to, as you said, you felt like this calling from Kid Lit, but you worked in film and design. I want to know your backstory, Vashti. What brought you, what road brought you over here to children's literature?
Okay, settle in, because it's a long one.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, I always liked to draw as a kid. It was kind of my go-to thing. I feel like one of my favorite things to do, I feel like you'll hear this a lot with illustrators that are my age, is that Disney movies and animated films and television shows were really, really inspiring to me as a kid. And so drawing was like the king of all kings in terms of creative work as a high schooler all the way up through college. But I realized only after I had switched media that I was never really expressing anything with my artwork. I was just good at replicating things. And when I picked up, when I took my first film class and was introduced to experimental cinema, the idea of multiple images juxtaposed with one another to you know, create a story and to create meaning, that was the thing that the light bulb went off. And it was like, oh, wow, this is how you can make meaning with images. And I just hadn't really considered that before. So I'm, for a long time, I studied film and I was just, you know, it was almost just kismet that the only practical filmmaking course that I could take at the University of Virginia was taught by an experimental filmmaker. So that the way I describe it is that, you know, experimental filmmakers are artists who work with film. Their goal isn't so much to make narrative Hollywood cinema, it's to make art, and their medium just happens to be the motion picture. And I was really, really excited about this place where I finally was, where I could tell stories and images and bring images together, and this kind of movement was finally like really making sense for me. And so I went to grad school to further my education in film. And the school that I went to study experimental cinema, there aren't too many schools in the United States that teach that, but one of them happens to be California Institute of the Arts. And that school is famous for not its film program, but its animation program, because it was started by Walt Disney.
Yes.
So when I went there, I certainly knew it was a very expensive school to be at. I knew that I was just going to take classes in every single department because I'm there, and definitely take classes in the animation department. And when I did, I realized, if you don't practice drawing for a couple of years, you are not going to be very good. So it was partially out of drive to be good again and, you know, still being attracted to like the process of drawing, that I really wanted to bring it back into my creative process. For the whole time that I was at CalArts, which is a 3-year program, I was working on only a handful of films. And so when I took these drawing classes just for fun, it was like really satisfying to get back to this place where I could start and finish something in an afternoon. I could start a drawing and finish it by the nighttime. Whereas I had worked on a film and it took me 2 years to make. So I was really attracted to this thing that I hadn't done in a long time. And at this point, I'm approaching it from the mindset of someone who has gone to film school, and I'm thinking about image making in this really narrative way that I hadn't considered before. I had developed this love for screenwriting and for cinema and you know, motion pictures, and so the idea of adding story to my artwork wasn't something that I had considered before I moved to film. So it was this whole other thing. Except I wasn't very good. So when I graduated film school, I was desperate to get a job in the film industry. Like, that's what you do. I wanted to get a job in the field that I studied. But meanwhile, I was drawing every night. I just made it a goal of mine to just draw every single day because I knew that I could get better. I was real. There was this like major misconception that I had when I was a kid that you just had to have talent to be a good drawer. And I realized no, because look what happened after I stopped practicing. For me, it's like 100% a skill set, or, you know, like a muscle. And if you don't you know, exercise it,
Yeah.
it'll atrophy. So even though I was doing other things, I'd gotten a job working on a TV show, I was drawing every night. While I was in film school, I mean, obviously there are lots of complications that come with making movies, budget, crew, time. This was the very first time I had ever had the inkling of turning something into a book. I had all of these ideas for movies that I was writing the scripts for my script writing classes. And I thought, you know, it would be so great. I'm never going to have the budget to make these movies, but you know, it'd be so great if I could, you know, illustrate them, maybe like turn them into a children's picture book or something. And so that was just a seed that was planted probably in 2013, 14.
Oh, cool. Did you love, I mean, did you read a lot of picture books growing up? Were you exposed to them? Did you find love in them?
You know, I think about this a lot. I really love books, like the physicality of a really great sized book,
oh, yeah.
Really great texture. And these are the things I remember the most. I remember being in elementary school and seeing, being in like story hour and watching the reader turn the page and that sound it makes. I loved that. I like very much wanted to be the person that got to make that sound and turn the page.
That's cool. Good tactile and auditory memory like that. To have those memories. That's cool.
There were only a handful of books specifically that I remember really loving, but I think that my major kind of attraction to picture books came as an adult, as someone who could, you know, I suppose I was appreciating them as an artist, as a maker,
yes,
rather than a reader.
To see that medium and to be attracted to it, I think is something that a lot of animators and artists are drawn to because it is a really special medium.
Yeah.
And so the seed was planted, but then you're still making films, right? You were still doing that
thing. Exactly. I was working on a TV show and I was still showing films at film festivals, but everything changed when the show got canceled and I got laid off. I had to move back home with my parents. All through this time, I was posting these daily illustrations that I was doing on an Instagram account that had a different name. I was completely undercover. I didn't
Stop
want anyone
it.
To know that that was me. I mean, look, I was very insecure about my artwork. I was so nervous about it. I was working with professional animators during the daytime. My job was just to be a production coordinator. So my job was very managerial. I just made spreadsheets and scheduled their schedules. So I didn't want anyone to know that I was working on this thing in the dark of night. But when I got laid off, I got literally almost to the day, a month into it, I got an offer to do just a small commission. And it became this thing that was like, okay, well, maybe I can make some money doing this. But what I knew that I wanted after I got laid off was a creative career. So I hadn't considered illustration at that point. I was really interested in designing books. I thought this could be my new thing. I really wanted to get a job working at a publisher, designing the interiors of books and doing the layouts. I don't know where this like transition happened, but that was my goal. So from about October 2015 up until about March 2016, I was desperate to get a job. I was going to interview after interview, and things did not work out. But I was getting more and more commissions during that time, and I started to kind of really consider, like, well, I'm making money doing this. Maybe I should just try to be an illustrator. And I was like whispering the word illustrator because I just didn't feel like, is that me? Am I allowed to say that? Like,
illustrator.
Who am I?
Don't speak it aloud.
I can't speak this into existence just yet.
No.
I felt
oh,
I was so
amazing.
Nervous. But, you know, things just didn't work out. Trying to get a job in New York. So I officially made the move to go back home with my parents in only Virginia in a super small town. Like, it felt like, oh, what am I doing? I'm doing this thing. It's crazy, but I'm doing it. So in March 2016, I moved back home and I joined the SCBWI, right. I guess like in April. And I think for the end of May, they had a competition, the SCBWI draw this competition to just do a drawing based on a prompt, and the winner would get their drawing placed in an email. I think I submitted sometime in May, and on June 1st, I woke up and I got an email, my monthly newsletter from SCBWI, and my drawing was in the newsletter, and I was like, whoa, I did it. and then the next day, I got an email from an art director at Simon & Schuster for an offer to illustrate a picture book. And I was like,
Oh, no.
It's like, uh-oh, this is happening too quickly.
A newsletter to an art director. Holy cow. Wait, is that book Festival of Colors?
That's Festival of Colors.
Oh, it's beautiful. Oh, my word. Your book is so beautiful.
So, I mean, I was like, even though that's amazing and exciting and this like incredible Cinderella story, I was terrified. It was like, oh my God, I can't do this. This is scary. I'm going to do this. I'm doing it, but whoo, somebody better come get me and take care of this. I'm like such an imposter over here.
That's great. What the mark of greatness, that imposter syndrome. How many people I'm sure are listening that have gone through that? Oh, that's great.
I don't know if it ever goes away. I still definitely have it. But, you know, like creating something and putting it out into the world is this really scary thing. And I don't know if it ever feels like you're a professional. Maybe after you've done your like Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours or something. I'm not sure. But, you know, I was super nervous, but I was like, this is it. I'm doing it. And things really snowballed from there The following October 2016, I went to an SCBWI conference. I met my agent there. We got a picture book deal pretty quickly after that. And then in February, I had the idea for Little Leaders, or what became Little Leaders. So it's been like a wild and crazy ride. I'm sure that like I must be on a cloud somewhere.
Wait, so who is your agent?
Carrie Hannigan from HSG.
Carrie Hannigan. Hi, ATC. Carrie. Who?
Hey,
what was the? Hey, Gary. What was the picture book deal? Is that for Festival of Colors, or is that something different?
That was for the name has now changed. It's called CC Love Science. So you might have seen the cover released a few days ago, or you know, maybe a few months ago.
I feel like I've seen it. Was it author? Who did you? It was authored by someone, not by you, correct?
Correct. Shelly Johannes.
Ah, Shelly. That's how I know it. Yep. Cool.
And I'm forgetting the other woman's name. I'll.
Sorry, I jumped on you on that one. Yeah, there are two names. I knew Shelly right away from Twitter.
Shelly R. Johannes and Kimberly Durding.
Kimberly Durding. Very good. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, and that one's from Green Willow Books. And that one, the first one will be out I think summer 2018.
Ooh,
so it's just been like a wild ride.
Oh, man. You know, this is the thing. This is the thing that like people should be aware of. You got to be careful when you're doing stuff online because there's people looking and it might suddenly turn into Simon & Schuster calling you or you taking all of these drawings from February, but from like an Inktober daily type challenge, making a book out of it. Ah, okay. Back to your book. Can I go back to Little Leaders?
Yes.
Thank you for taking us on that journey, by the way, Vashti. That's an amazing story. And I'm glad. I'm so glad that the pull brought you back to children's literature. You do a lot of things really well, but man, I love the way you make books. Love the way you illustrate. So I'm glad you're back here.
I'm so excited about it. I'm so excited to be in this place. Like, I literally cannot wait to work on the fiction that I've been working on and more picture books.
Oh,
so I am just pumped.
Oh, man. Okay. There's so much. Let's plan the next 5 podcasts right now.
All right.
Okay. Ready? Design. Ready? Here we go. There's this fun, amazingly fun thing to do with Little Leaders, and it's all about design, and it's amazing, and it's because of you, and it's amazing. And that is when you flip through the pages really, really quickly, You get this beautiful rainbow of color because the characters you've illustrated are all posed, like you're all centered, framed, positioned, height, however you say that. They're all like in the right same spot. So we can flip and the faces change. And the backgrounds, you have like this monotone background for each one that has sort of this dreamlike, I feel like it's like a dreamlike, what were those projects called? Crayon Relief, where you draw with a white crayon and then you paint watercolor over it, but the white crayon stays. Do you know what I'm talking about? That's what...
I do know what you're talking about. I'm so excited. Keep going, keep going.
Okay, so that is what the backgrounds look like to me. And I like that. I'm obsessed with that. Because they're subtle, their background, but because they're one color, it makes you study them and look hard and see all the clues that you've given us. Because on the paired page, you have like this... You follow a similar format that there's the same banner. You've got in all caps, you've got what the person is, and you see that all these different figures you highlight are from every single walk of life you can imagine. That there's actresses and filmmakers and singers and scientists, and just every I can tell how intentional you were at representing women from everywhere, every woman. And I love that, and I love that you have above the banner all of these other like little items, little clues. If I said to a student, like, okay, what five things could I pick out of your house, out of your mom's car, out of whatever, out of your backpack that would represent you? You have done that for these women, and I like that you have done that because then it gives us all these other connections back to the women. And the other design thing that I'm going to just throw, I know I'm throwing like all of the things out, but the other thing I want to throw out is that as you're flipping through these colors, through these pages, through these, like this beautiful rainbow, there is one that will stop you dead in your tracks because suddenly we have a full rainbow of color in the back. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh, I do.
Oh, and what is, there's a quote on the bottom that says something like, color is life.
Color is life.
Color is life. Man, this design, this intention that you have, who is the who is the individual, the color is life? I'm now I'm flipping through, I'm sure.
Alma Woodsy Thomas.
Alma, yes. The, flipping over, there she is. Teacher, painter, color is life. How vibrant that, can I call it that brickwork, that mosaic work, that beautiful, beautiful, solid, not pastel color, the intention to say, look, pay attention to this color here. It means something. Just those design elements, every woman with a different and intentional and important design element about her. There's no way I can wrap my brain around the fact that you did so many of these in the course of a month, because they feel thought out, planned, labored over. I'm sure that there were many a late night for you, Vashti, but the work you committed to this, there's not a page on here that doesn't belong in this book. There's not a word out of place. There's so much thought and intention you put into this. I can't tell you how much beauty is just coming out of this book from every page.
That, I mean, oof, that means so much, honestly, because every part of it was really thought out. You know, I wanted it to be the kind of book that you spent time looking at, or you could come back to and discover new things. And I wanted to be conceptually really thoughtful about each of the choices that I made. And in the case of Alma Woodsy Thomas, for example, you know, it does not fit the rule that I created. I created this, you know, set of visual, a visual language for the book. And I broke that rule for her because it just felt conceptually she needed it. Yeah. I wanted to focus. I couldn't attempt to describe her artwork in the language that I was using to describe everyone else's. And it was just a really incredible process to be able to spend time with these women's stories and then, you know, craft a book about them. I mean, obviously I really like book design.
I can tell.
It was just like a really.
I can tell. When you said about like, yeah, I considered working in book design to get a job that way, I was like, oh yeah, you've got all the, this is like your portfolio right here. Leaders.
Yeah. The one thing about the, I mean, like good on you for picking out that, the, like the flip book element. Coming from cinema, like I love the idea of a flip book, of being able to flip the pages and see this bit of animation through the images.
Right, because then the other images that stop you immediately stop you are Nina Simone and Raven Wilkinson and Wilma Rudolph, because they're not facing forward. And there's such, I mean, all you have to do is, this is like your teachable moment, right? That the children ask, why aren't they? Why don't they look the way the other women do? And all you have to do is turn it back on them and say, why don't they? Why don't they look the same way? Why did she draw profile instead of front on? And the movement that you've captured, the way you've positioned, I feel like there's that fashion designer in you, that quality that you are, not only picking out wardrobe for these women, but you're also positioning them. You're also choreographing how they'll appear in this book. There's just intention in every single inch of this book.
Yeah, I remember the first time the team at Little Brown saw my idea for the spreads. They were like, oh, you know, we typically start with text on the right-hand spread. And I was like, oh, no, but I want you to be able to flip through this book and see all the women's faces. I want you to be able to flip through it and see all of the costumes change. You know, I want it to look like maybe they're all the same character and that maybe they're all you, or you could be any one of these women. So I want to have that moment where you're in the store and you're deciding like, oh, if I want this book, I'm going to flip through it and see this amazing animation thing happen, to just bring this book, more life.
You said something on, I think it was on Twitter. You've been sort of answering people's questions on, on social media about the book. And I love the answer you gave for this next question I'm going to ask, I think in part because it felt like my childhood too. It felt like some of the books that I loved growing up. So I'm going to just ask you, as people will look on the cover of this book, as people will browse through this book, I'm just going to ask you, Vashti, why do all of the women that you've painted have their eyes closed?
Okay. Thank you for the question.
I loved your answer. Oh my word.
Well, okay. Well, first I'll say that as an illustrator, I feel like when you are attempting to illustrate emotion and personality, this kind of pose with the eyes closed and a subtle smile, I feel like is kind of language for serenity, for happiness. And that stems from these kind of classic picture books and illustrations by these mid-century artists that I love, like Mary Blair, Roger Hargraves. You know, if you look through any of these, you know, specifically I'm thinking about these mid-century artists who, you know, we can go to, have often used this pose for just a sweet little girl character. So that's just where the language comes from. But what I was really interested in creating for the Little Leaders, for specifically these Black women characters, was to be able to treat them with the same sweetness of these books that I love, the books that I grew up with. I think of Madeline, I think of like Eloise, and like even Winnie the Pooh, just really beautiful, sweet, innocent characters. And I really just wanted to see little Black girls treated that way with the same sweetness. I get really, really disheartened when I'm reading these statistics about, like, there's one, a study came out that little Black girls are viewed as less innocent and more adult than other girls in other, from girls their same age in other demographics. And that's just like, it's heartbreaking. So if I can just, you know, I don't do much. I draw things and I write stories. But if I can create content that reminds people that kids are kids, no matter where they are, who they are, how they grew up, I'll do that. So for me, I don't see them as a lot of people are like, well, how can they be bold if their eyes are closed? And for me, it's like, you can be bold and quiet. You can be bold and introverted. But I look at these little characters and I see them as sweet and innocent and, you know, despite their circumstances, are able to be pleasant.
I thought, would you mind if I share my thoughts as well?
Yeah.
Is that okay? Everything that you said echoes in my mind, as well as the way that they are positioned, the way that they are here reminded me personally of church, of that time of listening. And so when I saw that, I thought, here are these women, these brave, these bold, these accomplished, these amazing women who are waiting for us to read their stories, to learn who they are, so that by learning who they are, our eyes are opened. And when our eyes are open, theirs are open as well. It was just this thing that I felt like this was the right way to show them the waiting, that I'm gonna be here on this other page while you read about my life, while you take that time. And I just thought, I thought, yeah, that this is the way it needed to be, that as we brought back from the beginning, the idea that there are people that are leading around us that might be unassuming leaders, that might not know that they're doing this. They're just doing it, though, because it's the right thing to do, because it's the right way to live their life. And it's just the way that you've posed them in this, with eyes closed, with hands together, feels that way to me. I feel like it was a design choice that speaks, and we need those pictures to speak because that's what they're going to look at first.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that interpretation. It's like, for me, I often feel like I grew up as a really quiet kid and a really introverted kid. And people often think that means you're not strong or bold or, you know, can handle being a leader. And I think that that's just so wrong. It's just an incorrect assumption about being a quiet kid. So I'm really, my heart goes out to the little ones that are just perfectly fine, just, you know, sitting quietly, who have all of this stirring inside of their brains. All the wheels are turning and all of these ideas are blossoming. So I think that people will bring, you know, their own interpretations to the artwork. And in a way, it's created like that. They're simple characters. They're, you know, it's just a few lines that make their faces. And so in a way, you can project yourself onto it. You can project whatever you want onto their faces, into the characters. But I think that there's an opportunity to value just the simplicity and the sweetness in the way they're designed.
Yeah. And to have all of these women ordered in this way from their birth years, from what year was Phyllis?
Phyllis Wheatley.
1753. Phyllis Wheatley was born in 1753, and we carry that through Dominic Dawes in 1976, and to organize it that way and then continue the back matter to allow us to keep looking forward and looking forward to the more little leaders that you share, including Simone Manuel in 1996, born 1996, into that further reading, into the music. I love that you left the recordings and the film. There were the things that you carry us forward, so that, again, it brings us to the child holding the book. The child holding the book and thinking about what kind of leader they might be, what kind of ways that they can use their skills, their quiet power, as you bring up, too, to change the world. It's just, It's a beautiful thing, Vashti. I'm not going to be able to stop talking about it. There's not going to be a way for me to stop wrapping this up other than just thank you. Thank you for your hard work and your beautiful work.
No, I just feel like very honored to have such thoughtful questions. It's like a really beautiful thing to create something and then put it out into the world and let people see it, and they've got all these amazing ideas, and I feel so special that you picked up on all of these little things that I put into the book. So it's a really exciting moment.
Well, why don't we wrap up with the most exciting moment, which is that when this goes live, your book will be out in the world, and it's already out in the world, and it's in the hands of librarians and reviewers, and it's starting to be in the hands of readers, and that's exciting. So as this conversation reaches them as well, Vashti, can I wrap up by asking you this question? I will see a library full of children tomorrow morning. I know you can picture their faces. Is there a message that I can bring to them from you?
Well, from me to them, first I want to say thank you for being little leaders and little readers. And I'm just so excited to have the opportunity to share my book with them. I want them to know that they can be any one of these women in this book. And what I mean by that is I hope that they can see a little bit of themselves in any of their stories and feel inspired by them and, feel empowered to go after the things that they like. If you like drawing, there's a million opportunities to go after it. Like if you can read Alma Woodsy Thomas's story and feel inspired, you'll know that she didn't get kind of professional acclaim for her art until she was like 70-something years old. Like, you have so many options and opportunities out there, and I'm just so excited to know that that they'll have access to these stories, and they're so young and so ready to change the world. Does that sound crazy? I don't know, but... I'm like, I promise if I go to like a reading with little kids, I'll try to be cooler than this, but I'm just going to nerd out with them. I want to know if they can, if they would rather have the opportunity to time travel or fly. And if they can tweet me, I'd be very excited to know what their response would be.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 400 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books they'll love. Our theme music is composed by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I would love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast through Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Matt Tavares shares Red and Lulu and talks about the whole world getting turned upside down. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtimes a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.